All right, welcome to the Lindroth Hockey Podcast. We are Andrew Less again today. He got tied up at his work, and he just came back from his 30-day tour with Through It All. But I am here with a special guest. I know that Sheffield fans have been waiting all week since we posted this on Twitter that we were going to have this guest. We have Colton Sossaman joining us. Sauce, how are you doing? All the way from the Elite League, the Sheffield Steelers.
Doing good, man. Thanks for having me on tonight. I appreciate it.
So typically what we do is we'll start with your career and end up where you're at, but I think we're going to do it opposite. A lot of Sheffield fans want us to get right to the point here. So while we're recording this, the team has won the Challenge Cup, and now you've won the league championship. You got one more to go. Playoffs start soon. But talked a little bit about the Challenge Cup win, preparation for that, and then, of course, winning the league championship.
Yeah, it was obviously coming over to this league, didn't really know what to expect with how many trophies and how important the regular season was. And, you know, day one, we were kind of made aware of this, you know, tournament that kind of goes on through the season, and there's a trophy for that. And then, you know, every game is technically a playoff game because the league championship is the main trophy over here to win. And then, you know, you have the playoff champion as well. But I think, you know, we started the season off with a lot of the Challenge Cup games. So I think it was just like a cool introduction to this league. And, you know, it's, I will say this league is a grind because the back-to-back games are in two different cities is tough. And the travel is, you know, it's not crazy long, but they're like the Sunday games are always at 4 o'clock. So like when you're coming back from Scotland, like it's a decent haul. We started off with the Challenge Cup games and got really into that. We were winning right away. And I think we just had so much success like to start the season that it really just fueled us once we got going with regular season games, like consistently. But when we get to the Challenge Cup final game, it's weird because it's just sandwiched between two regular season games, you know? So it's like the mentality of not that all regular season games aren't important, but we kind of had to like switch focus to, man, there's a trophy on the line tonight. You know, we go from, you know, losing the game prior in regular season to like, well, we got to turn it on because we got hardware in the building. And so it was a really cool, just to see how our group like responded and came together for that game. And it's one game, anything can happen. Guildford had beaten us in the regular season. They were always tough to play against. Like, so, you know, we obviously didn't take anything for granted, even given what our record was and how well we were doing. You know, you just, anything can happen in hockey. And that's the beauty of our sport, I feel like, is anybody can beat anybody on a given night. So it was nerve wracking. Like it felt good to like feel those nerves. But you know, once we got going in that game, like I just felt like our depth took over and we were fortunate enough to win that. It was amazing.
So there was a lot of partying. We talked to Kevin about that and he said he was hungover for a day or two. So a lot of partying. Sheffield fans, we'll talk about them in a little bit about the importance of the fan base there and Chef for you guys. But clearly that was a night of championship. And then to win the league championship that you just did was really just being the number one team in the league based on the points, right? So you guys had a chance to seal that on an away game, I think, the game before this home game that you did win. It was almost better that you did it in Sheffield, yay or nay, or does it really matter?
Yeah, that previous Wednesday, we had a chance in Cardiff because it was technically a 4-point game, you know, with the swing. We had a game in hand on them as well. You know, and I think obviously we're competitors and we wanted to close it out in that game, but it's a really hard game for us to go on the road to the team that's trailing us in their own barn and win that game. Like that's a hard game for us to win. And, you know, we had been having a little hangover, if you will, from the cup final. And so it took a couple games for us to kind of like come out of it. We hadn't played very well on the weekend prior. So I think it was just like, it was disappointing to not win it there, but also the way we won it on Sunday in front of our own fans. Like, I almost don't know if I would have wanted to win it there, you know? Like, it almost like, and it feels weird to say that. Like, yeah, I would have loved to, but like the fan base that we have and just the celebration that we could have at our own building and do it in front of our fans, I think it was just made this season and that trophy even more special.
So Andrew and I have been following Sheffield for 2.5 years now, maybe 3 years. And so we feel we're well versed with the team, well versed with the league, especially us being in North America. However, I gotta ask, we can only go by the videos. What is it special about this balcony celebration?
Yeah, it was they told us about it after the Challenge Cup because I obviously had no idea. And so we take the trophy, everybody on the team, staff, players, all the staff, our game day ops, the camera crew, merchandise crew, like everybody comes up to this balcony. It's a second level overlooking like the main parking lot and one of the main entrances. And we walk outside and there's probably 4 to 6,000 people standing down there for both trophies. And it's just, we got beers and champagne, just singing, chanting. Like we had the radio up, like the music box up there. Like we're just hooking up and playing music. And it's just starts our night of partying because we just celebrate with them. And I guess it's a tradition in Sheffield, which is just amazing. And our fan base was already so spectacular, and how we had constant, sellouts and 7,000 plus at least on every single game, and the amount of encouraging support we received for some stuff that happened this season. Like, they were already some of the best fans I've ever played in front of, and then to see them celebrating with us just made it even better.
Yeah, and something I was going to bring up was the fan base, and they seem to be very much of a, I guess if I can compare them to NHL fans, almost like a Montreal, Toronto, Boston type fan base, where they're, if you're not playing well, they want it turned around quick. I mean, they're not, they're pretty quick to call you out when you're not doing things, but yet when things are going well, they certainly support you guys. And I know that it's been a long 4 years or something since they've won some of the things there, and the fans have been itching for it. Are there, well, I'm going to ask this prematurely, but is there any sort of town celebration, especially if you guys continue to win, or am I don't want to jinx anything, but it seems like the whole city's kind of abuzz with the Sheffield Steelers and go ice hockey, right? Over
Yeah.
there in the land of football, soccer, football, right?
Yeah.
So the fan base, are you getting to the point, it's not like with the red beard, like you and Kevin, it's not like you can go into a restaurant or the grocery store without being recognized, right?
It happens decently often. I'd say a grocery store mostly, and then a few of the bars we go to. Maybe it's happened at one restaurant with Kevin and I both there, but yeah, we run into people and they recognize us. And in terms of like a town celebration, I'm not sure. Like, I think if we were, if we were fortunate enough to win this last one, like we, had as a goal, we wanted to try to win all three at the start of the season. And I think it would be cool if the town embraced us on that and did something for that. I don't know if, I guess, if Sheffield when the last time they won the treble was. But yeah, it'd be cool to see the town do something for it. And I think, more I guess our group is just, we want just that feeling in the locker room again. Like with all of us just want that feeling personally and with each other. So, I mean, if the town doesn't end up doing something, I won't be upset because I know that my teammates and I are going to have a great time celebrating it. But yeah, one more to go.
When do playoffs start for you guys? Because I know you guys got a shortened season over there compared to North America stuff.
Yeah, 54 regular season games, and so we have five regular season games left. And then week of practice, and then that next weekend is we'll play the eighth seed in a two game aggregate
Yep.
for the first round, and then the four winners move on to that next weekend in Nottingham, and it's just the four teams single elimination, and winners play winners and losers are done.
Yeah. So let's talk a little bit about the team. You mentioned depth, and of course, the team has a whole bunch of depth. So on the offensive side, I mean, you look at the stats, and it's almost lopsided. There's so much depth. There's so many points being produced by the offense. Solid lines. I mean, you can't really find much of a weakness in the lines, can you?
No, I think that's what's made it such a special year is I think normally sometimes on teams when you have your skill guys and your top two lines theoretically are the lines that carry you offensively, there's an added pressure to, always be on, to always like have your A game. And we all love that pressure, but it is over the course of a season hard to maintain that form, consistently through 60 games of the season. But what's nice about this team is it's one of the first teams I've been on where like if the number one line wasn't going, the other number two lines that we have were going. So and even our fourth line, if you want to call it that, is not a fourth line. It's they've produced so much and they carry so much of the defensive responsibility as well as like chipping in tremendously offensively. So it's like I think that's where teams have a hard time against us is because I guess in this league you see a drop off maybe a little more between your top two lines and for your bottom two lines, but we don't have that. And that's I think what's allowed us to have success and to put guys in situations where they can succeed. And if they're not going one night or one weekend, another line is picking up the slack. So that's why you see we have four or five guys with 50 plus points. And, we probably have 10 guys on the team with 40. So it's just a shared responsibility, which is nice. And I think that just creates wins.
Yeah, I mean, it seems a bit odd in the North America strategy a little bit where the third and fourth liners, they have particular roles. They get so much ice time and the deal. And they're expected to do a certain role. It seems like Fox just says your role is to score goals. I don't care what line you're on. Just put the puck on net and get it in because I mean, yeah, like you said, they're so strong. Talk about the decor here. Again, low goals against. We'll talk about Greenfield here in a minute, but the defense has been solid all year long. What are your thoughts about the whole defensive core?
Yeah, I think everybody that we have is just so solid in terms of playing defense first and great skaters. Like all of our D can skate well and can be mobile. And I think the physicality of we're not an overly big decor really, but I think we play with some grit. Kev really leads the way on the physicality on the back end, but like Sam Jones, Brian Diffley, like all these guys are very physical and hard to play against. And so I think it, and it hasn't been an easy task. There's some really good players in this league, and it's been hard to maintain that level of defensive standard that we've had. But I think the system that we play as far as team defense, that relieves a lot of pressure from us as defensemen as well, because we have such good forward help and forward responsibility. So, which just makes my job of defending the other team's best players a lot easier because I have help. Like we different from basketball in that way, because it's like we don't have one-on-one responsibilities. We play this zone layered defense that when it's played correctly, it's very hard to create offense against us.
Let's go on to Greenfield. So it makes me, well, I won't even say it, but Greenfield's certainly holding the team together. Last year, we were not surprised, Andrew and I, because we had seen him play here in North America and didn't seem to. And of course, I mean, you're from North America, but for our UK listeners, and correct me if I'm wrong, two sauce, please. But it's like if you don't have an NHL contract in the American or East Coast League, it's very hard to make that jump into the NHL unless you're really earned it and sometimes lucky. Even when you earn it, you don't get it. And Greenfield just was on that cusp, I think. And but because he wasn't a contracted player, I think that kind of hurt him. He goes over to Sheffield. And man, I mean, he lit it up last season. I think he was probably the best goalie, and he's probably the best goalie this year. It's been a great fit for him. Kind of a dumb question, but what has his play been like for you guys? And what is it like to play in front of him? And is he a talker? Is he getting you out of the way? Is he telling you what to do? Does he not talk? What's he like?
Yeah. Oh yeah, he's a talker for sure. but I mean, yeah, to start off with your question, I mean, I think I'd been around, bounced around the American League and the ECHL, and I've seen some goalies, and he definitely deserved probably more of a shot than he was given while he was here playing in North America. That being said, I'm very happy he's on our team right now. And I think it's just his positioning. And the fact that he's so calm and collected, he's very mobile, but he's such a good like first shot goalie where he's like he takes up so much net and he challenges so appropriately, but he never seems to put himself. He's to me, he almost has like a Carey Price kind of style where he's very solid and compact, and he makes like difficult saves look very easy. Because he's in position. And I think that that's the goalies that I've seen at the higher levels, like that's what they do best, is they make these very difficult shots, tough angles, simple rebounds. Like he makes these saves look so easy because he's in the right position. And then when it calls for being athletic, super mobile, super athletic, can make saves that nobody has business making, you know. So I think he has been tested at times this season. I think, like I said, as a whole, our team defense has allowed him to make his 20, 25 saves a game. We try not to give up anything too crazy, but in games that we have or we haven't played our best, he's won those games for us single-handedly because of how dominant he's been.
And you don't have to respond to this. I'll just say it because I think hopefully the fans there, they seem to be pretty high IQ with ice hockey. Hopefully they give Greeny a little bit of a rest here going into the playoffs. You don't have to respond to that because that's not your call. That's Fox's call. But it sounds like, I mean, Fox has put together, I mean, he knows what to do. But yeah, hopefully they give him a little bit. But he may not want the rest. I mean, who knows? He seems like type of kid that he just wants to play. And sometimes you might have to, hey, we need you for whatever. But you don't have to
Yeah, I
reply
think
to.
I remember he had spoke about that a little bit, like at middle point of the season. He was like, "Oh, I love playing," but he's like, "I'm gonna learn from last year." I think he might have played too much. You know, he couldn't because they had some other injuries at goal last year, I think, and they kind of had to ride him a lot more. And so I think hopefully down the stretch here we can give him a couple games where he doesn't have to play at least, and then you know, and he's got some left in the tank for playoffs and stuff, and I'm sure Foxy will handle that however he sees fit. And but yeah, knowing Greener, he wants to play them all. I just think he's grown as a professional and learned more about himself and his body, and I think he understands like to be at my best, I can't play all 65 games, you know, like it's so we'll see.
And kind of talk about this. I'm sure you've had this in your career, and you've certainly seen it either in yourself or with other players. Just taking Greenfield for a minute, because you just mentioned, I mean, he was supposed to be the backup under Osterling, I think a guy coming out of Sweden. So when he signed with Sheffield last year, it was pretty much like, hey, you're going to be second goalie and first string goalie. Osterling, I mean, feel terrible for him. He got injured. All of a sudden, it's all Greenfield and no other backup goalie. I mean, they're trying to find like an e-bug there. And it seems like what an opportunity for someone like him to kind of show everybody what you can do. Because, like we talked about in North America, sometimes you don't get that shot.
Yeah, no, absolutely. He's taken full advantage of his opportunity, that's for sure.
So a little bit now, just leadership, and then I want to talk about your career and hear a little bit about your journey. So leadership-wise, you got a Brit as captain, Dowd. Boy, is he quite the player. Probably might be. I mean, I don't want anybody yelling at, but could be one of the great, if not the greatest, Brit player. I mean, the guy's just a monster. What is he like as a captain? The leadership, also. I mean, you're a vet. I mean, there's so many vets on the team. What's the leadership like in the locker room? And then, of course, the coaching staff from Foxy on down.
Yeah, I mean, Rob's I think he's everything you'd want in a captain. I think he's got a very stoic demeanor about him. He carries himself like a pro. You know, he takes care of his family. He's such a good family guy. And then when you see him around the rink, like he treats us like we're brothers, you know, like we're his kin, you know, and the respect that he has for us. And I think Sheffield as an organization, how proud he is to be the captain there, just speaks volumes to who he is as a person. And then, yeah, his hockey takes care of itself. I mean, he's such a pain in the ass to play against. And, you know, I hate practicing against him. I can't imagine like some of these teams that have to play against him. Like, he's physical, he fights, he can score, he hits, like, he's one of the hardest working guys I've ever played with. I mean, and you know, he's got emotion too. Like, so it's nice to like see him get fired up, you know, when we're not had a bad period or something's bugging him. Like, he's vocal, but he's never like insulting or damaging to the confidence or to the cause. You know, he's always standing behind what he says, and he always goes and backs it up himself. You know, so if there's something we're not doing as a team in one period, he goes out the next period and makes sure he's on it in terms of that. You know what I mean? If we're lazy on the back check or if we're, yeah, so he just backs up everything he says with his play, but we have so much respect for him as a guy. Truly just a great, great human, and love being on a team with him. And I think that just echoes right up into our coaching staff too. I think that the coaching staff is very similar. They have Foxy and Karts are both very stoic, very cards close to the chest, but I feel like I could talk to them about anything, but there's that level of like player coach respect that they have, where it's almost like as a player playing for them, it's like, wow, I feel like they care about me and they respect me so much that I feel like I have to play even better because I don't want to let them down, you know, because he gives us a leash. He gives us, you know, he's given us multiple days off, like time, things that have benefited us this season. And so it's like we come out the next weekend and the goal is to win, you know, to win and to stay focused on what these dreams and these markers that we set at the beginning of the year. So it's just been total dedication to that. And it starts with Foxy and has just gone down our lineup.
And I know we're starting to tread into the business side of hockey, but I think got to give kudos to owner Tony because he's put together the team and kind of, you know, putting the business side together. And just in the last 3 years of following Sheffield, I could just see, I mean, he's making trying to give, I guess, Foxy everything that he feels he needs to make a championship team. And already you guys are proving that. And it's tough in the UK. I mean, not to pick on some of the other teams, I'm not going to mention them, but it seems like there's like four of the ones that have money and the rest of them don't. And you can see that in the players. You can see that in the quality of the imports, even to the quality of the development of the UK players. But anyway, Tony's certainly doing a good job of giving all the tools that the coaches staff and you guys need, right?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, he's taking care of all of the needs that, you know, we all have coming in with families and, he payment is always on time. Like he takes care of us when we need something. Like he's available and approachable. I think that that's something that's also rare, is to have sometimes the owner is a little too distant. I feel like he's just the right amount of distant, where he's up there and he's boss man, but also, like, again, feel like I could give him a call and have a conversation with him and it would be fine. I'm just talking to a friend. So it's such a nice balance that we have here. And I mean, our facilities, apartments, everything is just perfect.
So we're gonna shift into your career and get some background here for the fans that might not know this, and probably some stories that they've never heard. But before we do that, I just want to kind of, instead of start at the beginning, I just want to segue this by saying, how did you get to Sheffield? You're in Allen, right? You're in Allen, Texas. In the East Coast League. How were you approached? What was it like? I know that during the COVID time you were over in Austria and I think Slovakia, I think. And but so you've been over there, but again, you gotta move the fam to the UK to Sheffield. How were you approached? How was sort of the negotiations so that they got you to sign a contract in the UK from Alan?
Yeah, I mean, it goes back, I guess, to the end of the season in Austria, 2020, because the UK was having that tournament, basically. Like, they didn't have a season that year. So 2021 was when they wanted me to come. Foxy had reached out originally to have me come and try to play in the tournament. It was, I think, 10 weeks or something like that, just to come. And it was my first year in Europe, and I was kind of like, I'm just gonna wait. Like, thank you for the, I appreciate it, but maybe at a different time. I'd always wanted to come check out the UK League, just from friends past, and it had been on my list of places I just wanted to visit. So yeah, then fast forward through Slovakia, he reached out again at the end of that season, and I told him that, unfortunately, my wife had an issue with her visa, and so I wasn't going to be able to travel back to overseas because she had a ban on her passport. So I was like, we're going to have to hold off one more year. Like, I promise, like, let's just stay in contact. Like, this door is not closed for me coming to play there. It's just, I kind of was handed a shit sandwich, if you will. Like, and then at the end of the season in Allen, I was actually at my wedding. And he had texted me a couple days before that because their season had ended, and he was like, any interest? And I was like, yeah, I'm definitely thinking about it. Like, we're still in playoffs. Like, let's keep in touch. And then, Daniel Ciampini came to my wedding, and, we agreed to all of us, him, Kevin, and I agreed to come to Sheffield over a lot of tequila. So yeah, I was having quite a few margaritas and some shots of tequila, and then the next day I woke up and I don't re exactly remember the conversation, but we talked about it the next day at the pool, and he said, "So you're coming for sure?" And I was like, "Is that what I said last night?" And he was like, "Yep." And I'm like, "All right, I guess I'm going." And so he and Foxy both have been recruiting me, I guess, for 3 years now, but it was Daniel Ciampini and some tequila at my wedding. That was the final
That's awesome.
insurgent into the UK.
That's awesome. So I want to start real quick in Northeastern. You're a Northeastern product. What was your decision to go to Northeastern? Not that it's a bad school. I mean, what a great school, Hockey East, eh?
Yeah.
But what was your decision? I'm sure you had other offers at other Division I schools. What was it about Northeastern that sold you to go?
Yeah, I was originally committed as a 17-year-old to UMass Lowell, and then
Which
coaching
is
changed.
my alma mater, by the way.
No way. That's
Yeah.
cool. Yeah,
Anyway.
Blaze McDonald recruited me to go there, and then when the coaching change happened, I just nothing against Norm, just wanted to play for a coach who recruited me, so backed out of that. And then yeah, it spoke to Northeastern kind of middle of the way through my 19-year-old year of junior, 20-year-old year of junior, and as soon as I found out what the bean pot was, I was like, I'm going. So.
So we ran long on time with the Sheffield stuff, which is great. It's current stuff. Usually we dig a little bit deeper into the college years, but give me one or two memorable moments or other players' favorite line mates that you had there at Northeastern.
Yeah, I think a moment that really sticks out was my senior year. We had kind of started the season off really poorly, and I think we had one win at Christmas, which in a college season, that's like your season's done. You know, there's no chance you're getting into the playoffs, and came back for the second half of the year, and I think we lost one game in the second half, and somehow ended up winning the Hockey East tournament and making it to the NCAA tournament. And yeah, that was just a cool ride to go on from being dead in the water to hosting a Hockey East championship trophy. It was just a whirlwind, and it was kind of a cool way to cap off my senior year.
One or two favorite line mates that you might have had during that time?
Let me see. I played with Kevin Waugh for in junior when we were in Lincoln together, and just such a good dude, dynamic forward, and always loved being his teammate. And Matt Benning, plays for the San Jose Sharks now. He was a good dude. He was another D-man that I really enjoyed. Josh Manson with the Colorado Avalanche now. He was the captain my 2 of my 4 years, and just a tough, hard, physical guy. I knew he was going to have a good NHL career. Just a great dude off the ice as well, and I really liked now the head coach Jerry Keefe. He and I were really close, and I feel like I still have a good relationship with him.
So, signing your first contract, you go with South Carolina, the Stingrays in the East Coast. Bring us through that kind of moment. I mean, you played junior, how you played college, Division One, Northeastern. Doesn't get any better than that. Well, maybe University of Maine. We've got some former
Yeah.
guys on University of Maine that would say, "Hey, don't say that." Anyway, now all of a sudden, you signed your first your ECHL contract. What was that like? How did that come about? And I'm going to ask the follow-up question is, you go from full mass college to grown men, got to raise families, big difference. What was your shift in your game like?
Yeah, it was I think I just, after we lost in the NCAA tournament, I just kind of wanted to keep playing. And so just because I felt like we had ridden such a high the second half of the season, and like, I was like, well, if there's an opportunity to go play somewhere right away, I'm going to do it. And South Carolina called, and I was like, yeah, I'd love to keep playing. And so they had 4 games left in the regular season, finished out the regular season, and they were pretty transparent with me when I got there. They were like, we're going to give you these 4 games and see how you do. And then we kind of have to make a decision on our playoff roster, because in the ECHL, it's a little different. You have to, like, you can only have a certain amount of guys. And, I was fortunate enough that they kept me around for playoffs. And, but yeah, that adjustment, like, to the pro game's definitely different. You know, it's, I'd say, like, the speed and stuff is a big factor, but just the strength. You know, when you go from playing, you know, I was a 24-year-old. When I graduated, I'm playing against 18 to 24-year-olds, you know, and then now I'm going on the forecheck with a guy who's 30, you know, who's played 10 years. Like, it's just different in terms of, like, there's so much to learn and adapt. And being a smaller defenseman, like, it was a hard learning curve, like my first couple years, like, of pro, just how to defend bigger, faster, stronger guys. I was glad to get back to the half shield, by the way, though. I think college should move to that. But yeah, I think that was the biggest adjustment for me, was definitely the speed and just the strength, being an undersized defenseman. Like I said, it was difficult.
Because I don't want to run over time, we're appreciative of your time with us. I don't want to go through every team, but you've had quite the journey between the East Coast, a lot of call-ups from the American League, a lot of different teams in the American League. Kind of I guess the question would be maybe about one or two of your favorite teams. What were they? Maybe, and the reasons why. But also talk a little bit about the struggle of a pro hockey player that might not be drafted and kind of making your way through, the East Coast jungle through to American League and trying to get that. Maybe you get a chance at the at an NHL, but chances are pretty slim if you're undrafted. So talk a little bit about the challenges of that as a player.
Yeah, it's definitely not easy. And I think my resume, it basically the way I sum it up was I just wanted the opportunity. I just wanted to play in front of as many people as I could, and hopefully somebody out there would like my game, and that was kind of my whole thought process was obviously you don't make as much money in the ECHL, and then if you're a lower end American League guy, you're not making crazy amounts of money that we all wish we were making. But I think I just wanted the opportunity to try to show what I had. And so I think the reason I took so many call-ups was like, yeah, maybe the coach likes me, or maybe I fit into this system. Like, I think that that's half the battle with hockey players is, and the guys who are fortunate enough to make it to the National Hockey League, like the bottom end guys are right place, right time. They're what the organization needs at that moment, and then they're given an opportunity, and hey, they take advantage of their opportunity. But when you look at how the NHL is like broken down, it's the top six on every team are phenoms, superstars, never going anywhere. And then you look at the third and fourth lines, they're very interchangeable. So it's who likes who at this situation, what do they need? And so that was just my thought process was I was just trying to get myself in front of enough eyes, just being an undrafted player. But I've had great stops. I mean, I loved Hershey. Providence was very fun to play in. That building is an awesome building to play in. Had a great time in Utica. I ended up meeting my wife there. So that was, great. In terms of ECHL cities, like I've also been very fortunate. I haven't really played in a bad city. South Carolina, Manchester, Idaho, Allen. I mean, all fantastic ECHL cities, and I'd say probably Allen or Idaho would be my favorite. I really, really enjoyed my time in Idaho. It's a great city. It's a great hockey town. But then I had an amazing time last year in Allen as well, playing golf year round. It was, yeah, so I'd say that it's probably between those two for my favorite spots.
So right around COVID, that's where you leave to go overseas. I think you went to Austria first, yeah. What was the decision to go over there? Did it kind of things played out the way they played out between the American and East Coast League, and you just decided to try something new, or was there an offer you couldn't refuse? Because a lot of guys will make a lot more money playing in Europe than even playing in the American League.
Yeah, for sure. I think it was just the ECHL wasn't sure if they were gonna start on time. And so I think it was originally I had planned like, oh, I might go over there and then maybe come back, like once that ECHL season started. 'Cause I was kinda on that every player has that moment where they're like, okay, is it time to give up on my dream of the NHL and then, go to Europe? And I was kinda like in between. Maybe I could do another year, maybe not. And then I just ended up loving Austria a lot and the group of guys that I was with there. And so I decided to stay the full season there. And then it just made sense to, okay, Europe is where we're at. And like I said, I just had the one weird year where I came back to Allen, which, like I said, I absolutely loved playing in Allen, but had everything worked out with my visa in Slovakia and stuff, I probably would never have gone back. I just would have stayed in Europe. But yeah, I just think I'm at that point in my career now where Europe is just a little less hard on the body. And I think I'm getting a chance to play with some guys that I played against forever. And, being able to be teammates with them now is that's, I think, what we're all kind of chasing now.
Yeah. So we're back here to Sheffield. So what, give me your opinion on, I guess, a comparison, if you will, between East Coast American League and the elite league? Because I mean, I've seen some in the elite league. I've seen first round NHL draft picks not be able to hang in there with the elite league. They take it dropped. I've seen that happen in the last 2 years. So can you compare the level of play between elite league, American, East Coast? Where would you kind of put it?
It's not as deep as the American League in terms of, like we talked about, with that, with your depth, your team depth. But in terms of the physicality and the speed, it's also different because most of these rinks are not like the same size. So we play, it's almost a challenge every single night because you have to adapt your game to what arena you're playing in. Whereas like it's not just standard like the NHL ice that we normally are all playing on. Some buildings are smaller, some buildings are bigger. So I think it provides a challenge and a unique style for guys to try to embrace and perform at, because the arenas hold their own challenges as well as a high-end top half of the league. So I'd say it's very comparable to the ECHL in terms of the depth. The ECHL only dresses 11 forwards. We have the chance to dress four full lines and 6D. I think it would be very comparable to the ECHL. I don't know if it maybe is as fast because of the youth in the ECHL. I think that there's a little more youth playing back home, and this league tends to be a little bit older of a league. But the hockey, like I said, has been very, it was better than I thought it would be. I was very surprised, and I was very humbled to come and to see how good the quality of hockey was.
So looking here to the last few games in the regular season, and then you go into the playoffs, what teams are you really kind of looking out for? Belfast is always strong. They might not be as strong this year as they've been, but they're always strong. Guildford, you never count them out. Cardiff, you can never count those guys out. And even maybe some wild card like Manchester, I think just qualified for playoff. They got a hell of a goalie. What teams do you think would is on your personal radar of saying, hey, I'm going to have to really check these guys out, do a little scouting if you even do that. I don't know. Maybe that's not your job. You know what I'm
No,
saying?
no, we're definitely prepared. Every time we go to play, we don't take, I think another thing that has allowed us to be as successful as we've been is we haven't looked at opponents as inferior. You know, like I think there's a certain level of like respect you have to give to everybody in our game. And we've lost games. We've lost games to Cardiff, we've lost games to Belfast, we've lost games to Manchester, we've lost games to Fife, like Guildford, Glasgow, like they've beaten us, they've played well and they've beaten us. So they have our respect. Everybody in this league has our respect in terms of we're going to take you seriously. And it's our job to just prepare and to execute at the same level that we've been doing the whole season. And I don't think that's going to change. We're focused and determined to finish this off because that was the goal, to win three trophies this season. So I think our mindset is staying the same. And for me personally, like I think I'd be excited to play anybody. You know, I Fife, if Nottingham gets in, they're going to be a tough opponent to handle. Like it's at the best time of the year, you know, to everybody's playing their best, and you truly get to play against the best. So that's what I'm looking for.
So I'll close it with this, and I'll leave it to you. I let Kev do this as well. Kind of your message to the Sheffield fans here, finishing the regular season into the playoffs. If I'm making you give a message, I guess. So what would be the message to the fans? Because they're certainly, I know, going to be listening to this.
No, I can't thank them enough for the support that they've shown, and just to rally around us when we needed them the most. And man, I'm getting emotional. Sorry. Yeah, just that we're gonna finish this off, and you know, we just appreciate everything that they've done for us, and we hope that we've done enough for you guys to be proud of us.
Awesome. Good way to end it. So hang on. We'll say goodbye off here, but officially, Sauce, we can't thank you enough for coming on our podcast.
Yeah, thank you so much, dude, for having me. I appreciate it.